Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carrillo.
This is Pam Shriver.
This is Yannick Noah, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, Switzerland have put last year behind them once and for all, because they are the champions of the Billie Jean King Cup for the first time in their history. And it was 1998 when Martina Hingis tried to do it, and she was at the absolute peak of her powers, and she couldn't get over the line with Paddy Schnieder in that final against Spain. A year ago, it was Russia and all the recriminations and controversy about that final, and Matt prodding them in the press conference and causing all sorts of trouble. He's been back in the press conference today. We'll hear about that in a little while. But Matt, in the end, that tie worked out pretty much exactly as you thought it would last night. 2-0 in Switzerland's favour. No need to go to the doubles. Jill Teichmann drafted in just as you thought. So are you inside Heinz Gundart's head or what?
I'm starting to think I might be. I mean, I have spent a very long time in his company over this week in various press conferences when he's remembered to come to them. But yeah, a very different feel to last year. And I think Switzerland are worthy, worthy winners. They have not lost a live match in this tournament. The only match they lost was doubles when they had already secured their qualification. Heinz Gundhardt has got his team selection spot on every time, chopping and changing between Teichmann and Golubic. And obviously then Belinda Bencic in the number one singles position, just so incredibly reliable, playing incredibly well. And therefore, they didn't need the doubles. And yeah, I did think that Heinz Gundhardt would go with Teichmann today, given the head-to-head with Sanders and the fact that it was in this competition last year. And just about, it was the right decision, because that was where the drama was today, that first match. Bencic won very, very easily, but that first match was extremely tense, and just Switzerland got over the line.
You seemed in our conversations as that match was going on as though you always expected that that would be the end result, even when Sanders levelled at one set all. I mean, I was amazed by the fight. Not how hard she fought Sanders, but the fact that she just wouldn't go away, even when she was clearly hampered, clearly impeded by something, an injury. And, you know, she looked as though there was no real way of getting back into it, but she just hung around, didn't she? She was setting a break down. I'm sure Teichmann got a bit edgy as well. But then what happened to Sanders' game that I don't recall happening a year ago, and I didn't see it until this point, was she just started swinging and just going for shots. And she started to hurt Teichmann. And it was a great battle. In the end, and I mean, the third set, yeah, it did kind of always feel in the end that it would go Switzerland's way. But I loved watching these two lefties go toe-to-toe, very similar-looking games. I mean, somebody with a lot more technical know-how than myself would know how similar their games actually are. But to the eye, they were very similar. And I really enjoyed the patterns that we got to see, because you don't see a lot of left-handers up against each other from the baseline that look similar like those two did. And it was a great match. Great. I think there was a good crowd in for this one. It looked like, certainly from the TV pictures I was looking at. And I think, people will go home with a lot of memories of that match.
Yes, I think so. It was pretty much the biggest crowd of the week, I believe. And it was a really good contest, as you said. I did always think Teichmann was going to win. And the reason I felt that was partly because Sanders was hampered. She was injured. So I always thought that there was something there for Teichmann to be able to exploit. But mainly for Sanders to be able to get back into the match, she had to, as you said, peak for such a long time, it seemed like, from a set and a breakdown. And she managed it to win the second set. But it always felt like sustaining that, which wasn't quite her natural game, as you said. It was even more aggressive than she normally is. She likes to come forward, but she was really teeing off from the baseline, which isn't necessarily her game. I just always felt like that would be really hard to sustain. And it had been such a huge effort just to get the match level again, that pushing on even further and winning the third just always felt like it would be tough. And I think the matchup kind of suits Teichmann if they're both playing okay, because I think Teichmann wants those baseline rallies that you described. She's got a bit more spin on her shot. She's able to push Sanders off the baseline. And I think that was why Heinz Gunthardt went with that pick, because it's a pretty good matchup for Teichmann if she doesn't get tight, which she did in the second set and kind of allowed Sanders back into it as well as Sanders did to get into it. So I was full of admiration for Sanders for making that a match, because for a long time it looked like it was going to be over in straight sets. And then I was, you know, full of Teichmann for fighting through those nerves, fighting through a player who was playing really well and ending up on the winning team. It was a really exciting match.
Yeah, I enjoyed watching both Teichmann and Bencic try to deal with the inevitable nerves and the thoughts that would have been raging through their heads about what was possible here if they could just win these last few points. I love seeing what title, big cup pressure does to a tennis player. And obviously, it's even more heightened because of what happened a year ago to these very players and missing out and being so disappointed and so angry as well and wanting to put the record straight and have their name on that trophy. And both times in those two singles matches, the non-playing player sort of appeared and was just clearly trying to help the process of staying in the moment and not losing the grip on the match. And even Bencic, as dominant as she was, I mean, she beat Ayla Tomljanovic 6-2, 6-1. And look, the patterns of the match felt that dominant. She was brilliant, absolutely brilliant. She was just absorbing the power of Tomljanovic and redirecting it, making it uncomfortable for us. Kind of Tomljanovic's worst nightmare as an opponent. And yet there were still some edgy moments when Bencic is trying to get over the line. and she did. She did it emphatically in the end. And the scenes at the end were exactly what you want to see in an event like this. They've put themselves out for this event. The Swiss team, the Australian team, obviously Australia, the distance they've travelled to get to this event. And I love seeing how, I mean, they were great sports, Australia. They were looking their opponents in the eye, handshakes, congratulatory. All the players were speaking warmly of what their opponents had done today. But they were devastated and they were determined, like Switzerland a year ago, to come back and get the name on this trophy. And that's what this event needs, isn't it? It needs people to care like that. And that element of it is not in doubt. You know, I think we've seen a couple of performances that have been a little bit listless from one or two teams or benches and stuff. But when you look at Britain and Switzerland today and Australia today and a few others, it's told you it matters. And, Switzerland did not put a foot wrong all week. They have been incredible. And actually, it's something that you hear captains talk about, how important it is all year long to be going through this process of building team spirit and understanding your players. It was really, really shown today, wasn't it?
It was. And I think my takeaway of what I find so impressive about the Swiss team is that Bencic is always going to play the number one singles. That is just a given because, you know, she's the best player. And in particular, she thrives in this event. But then you've got two players in Golubic and Teichmann who are so close. You know, there's very little between them in terms of quality. And I just think for them to sort of put their ego aside and clearly just help the team and go along with Heinz Gunthardt's decision of who plays in which match, because presumably they both want to play in every match. And yet there didn't seem to be any kind of inner rivalry about who was going to play. It was just simply what's best for the team. Teichmann bought into it. Golubic bought into it. And I just think that really shows great team spirit, great leadership. And I think that's a big part of why they won, you know, because they're all on the same page. And absolutely, last year's defeat had made them really, really hungry for this one. Something I didn't get to ask in the press conference, which we're going to hear shortly, but something I've been thinking about is now whether they will have the hunger to win it again and again and again, you know, like we've seen the Czechs do, or whether just winning it this one time because of, you know, the fact that Switzerland had never won it before, the heartache they all felt last year, the anger they felt last year, whether that's enough. I get the sense that actually they're going to be more like the Czechs rather than more like the Swiss Davis Cup team, you know, where Federer was like, I want to win it once. And then, I mean, he barely played the competition again, did he, after he won it? I think Bencic, Golubic, Teichmann are a close-knit group, and I think it's good for them to play and compete in this event. And I suspect that, you know, in 12 months' time, we'll be talking about the Swiss as one of the leading contenders at next year's Billie Jean King Cup finals as well.
Well, 12 months ago, Matt's first question to Heinz Gunthardt elicited more or less an accusation of cheating towards the opponents. So I think it's high time we go back and have a listen to them talk to each other again in today's press conference. There are a few other journalists in there this time, unlike last time, but Matt got backup. The first. You had backup, and it was a rather different scene. Have a listen.
Heinz, I was in the press conference in Prague last year after the final. This is quite different. How sweet does it feel?
It's extremely sweet. Maybe it's even sweeter after last year. I don't know. You know, you obviously can't compare, but, you know, we've been working for this a long time, not just this week. I mean, you used to call it the Fed Express, trying to get to the end station, which is the title. And it always stopped at the semifinal location or before, unfortunately, or last year in the finals. So that one more was very difficult to come by. And when things are really difficult and you finally conquer it, it's super sweet.
Belinda, I just wanted to ask, with the Olympics last year and now this, what is it about playing for Switzerland that really brings out the best in you?
Yeah, probably I should just become a team player now and never play like for myself again. And the next tournament for us is the United Cup.
So
that's great. We're going to wear red and white again. So that means we're going to play some good tennis. I'm not sure what it is, or actually no, I'm very sure, because it's just what makes a team, and I feel like I'm not playing for myself out there. I'm fighting for, you know, all the team and for all Switzerland, for our country. And this was like a childhood dream coming true, you know, like watching the national or hearing the national anthem and watching the Swiss flag. It's really something big for me, and I just feel like it brings out the best in me. It brings out like those extra percentages which maybe I cannot bring in the other tournaments. But after the Olympics, this is pretty big. I mean, this was a huge goal of ours, especially after last year. And as Heinz said, I mean, it's so different that really the line between the heartbreak and the victory, it's so small, and the difference is so huge in emotion.
Do you feel this can help you individually next year as well, potentially?
Yeah, absolutely. I'll just need like Vicky and Jill and Simona and Heinz in all my matches, and Phil. And yeah, I'll just need them in all my matches. And if they cannot make it, I'll just retire.
Well done to you all. Russell Fuller from the BBC. Do you feel as if that was very much the missing link for your country, for Switzerland, in that collectively as players, not just you, but others have won Grand Slams and Olympic gold medals and Davis Cup? Was the Billie Jean King Cup the one that you felt you were really missing?
Yeah.
Yep. I mean,
we're the first ones. So.
It was a matter of time. Like, obviously, there, of course, we were going to win it at some point.
Linda, I told you last year.
No, I'm just kidding. But it's really like we worked really hard for this and we wanted this trophy so much. And it means a lot to us. And I mean, it's a privilege playing for our country. And I still cannot believe we actually did it. I mean, ask us tomorrow, but yeah.
Question for either Belinda or Jill. I noticed that you replicated the celebration that Federer and Wawrinka did in 2008 at the Olympics. Was that a plan, something you had planned, or just a spur of the moment thing?
No, I think it was just like in the moment, because it's so iconic. At least for us, like in Switzerland, like we see it everywhere, and they're also like amazing, and they were both our role models. And I'm so glad we have the same picture now on the female side.
I haven't seen it yet,
but hopefully we'll get the same picture, like just female and male.
Yeah, I just needed like to lay down for a minute and just like soak it all in, but I still haven't. But it was just I don't know, we didn't think much, we just were in flow, we were just living the moment.
I've actually remembered like the part when like Stan was lying down and then, you know, Roger did this hand thing. So
they were on fire.
This moment, I saw the picture, so I did the same. It was all like, you know,
deja.
Exactly. Kind of.
It's a Swiss tradition. It starts.
As a kid, you get taught like that, you know, it's like you need to do
how
this.
To behave when you win.
And Heinz, you've obviously had a very long career in tennis, lots of different sort of roles, player, coach, captain. Can you sort of describe how the emotions you're feeling now compared to others that you've felt in this sport?
Are we finally your
favorite? How far do you want me to go back? Exactly. How far do you want me to go back? You know, obviously, playing yourself, you can't replicate. But the second best thing to that is coaching this team, believe me. I'm sitting on the court, and my adrenaline, if you could measure it, is sky high, right? Because I'm kind of feeling them, what they're going through. You know, it's difficult out there. It's very, very difficult. And, you know, I'm trying to help, but I'm not hitting a single ball. So how much help am I? All right. So it's a unique position to be in, sitting on a court, not being able to hit a ball, because I literally can't, I'm too old anyway, but participating and being so near everything at the same time and feeling literally what they're going through. So, I mean, it's an absolute privilege.
Could you give them cheers?
Cheers.
Cheers.
Well, cheers indeed. Lovely end to the press conference there. Matt, were they having a few drinks in there?
I was so pleased when they all walked in with glasses of champagne. I thought, right, this is going to be a good press conference. And Jill Teichmann in particular, I think, had a few already. She was the most tipsy, I think, and coming in off mic, but in a much more enjoyable, fun way this time. It couldn't have been a more different scene to last year. I mean, honestly, just the mood in the room was totally different. I feel like I've really come full circle with the Swiss team.
Cathartic for you as well.
It was, in a way. We all needed closure.
That's brilliant. It was very interesting, actually. I liked the questions Eleanor Crooks was asking as well about Belinda Bencic. It's a question I've been wondering myself, you know, is this repeatable on the tour now? And I guess we're going to have to find out. But, I mean, clearly she comes alive in this environment. I loved the insight that Heinz Guenthalt gave about how this is the closest thing to playing and what it's like to be out there, you know. And I kind of get that even just from the little bits of involvement we get to be right on the sidelines of a match sometime. I've been very close to tennis matches in the past, almost on a bench. And you do feel things that are going on out there. But moreover, I just love what this event means to them all. And the jackets that were designed by Tory Burch that you were talking to Billie Jean King about yesterday, I do feel that that's a lovely initiative and a really clever one to build a sense of permanence to the event. And yeah, I loved listening to that. It was a very, very different scene in the Australia press conference, as you could probably imagine. I listened to that, Matt. You sent me the recording of it. I mean, basically, they're just great sports, aren't they? They gave everything they'd got, and they can walk away really with no regrets, but they're very, very disappointed.
They are, and I think Tomjanovic in particular. You know, I think Sanders did absolutely everything she could today. She's been just a total star this tournament and exceeded all expectations, really. Tomjanovic, you know, I said a few days ago what a class act she is and how much I like her and what a great player she is. And all of that stands. In hindsight now, looking back, she didn't actually have a particularly great tournament as the Australian number one. She only actually won one completed match, you know, against Anna Karolina Schmiedlova, and then she beat Elise Mertens via retirement. And then in the last couple of days, she's lost to Harriet Dart, and she's lost today to Belinda Bencic. And look, that can happen. Bencic is a better player than Tomjanovic, I would say, when they're both playing well. But she was pretty disappointed with her performance today. She felt like she could have done more. And I just wonder for this Australian team, you know, that's two finals in the last three editions of this event, and a semi-final last year as well. They've been very, very close. But I do wonder how much better they can get. You know, how much more is there for this team to give? I think they're relying on Storm Sanders getting even better. They're probably relying on Tomjanovic getting better. Maybe Ellen Perez, you know, and Storm Sanders combining to become a really good doubles team or something like that. But at the moment, it feels like there's probably always going to be a stronger team left in the competition. You know, they've lost to Switzerland in the last 2 years. Someone with a really good number one, I think, who can also play doubles is going to be tough for Australia to beat, I suppose. So, you know, Alicia Molik is absolutely determined that they're going to keep chipping away. They're going to keep coming. And I don't doubt that for a second. But I am just wondering how much better they can actually get, or have they already sort of maxed out everything from this team? Of course, there's one Australian who is no longer an active player who you would think if you put her in, it's a different conversation. But it is what it is. And Ash Barty has retired. And therefore, that sort of limits the absolute upper level, I think, of Australia. But full credit to them. They've been absolutely amazing in this competition for a few years now. And let's see whether, like the Swiss, they can turn being runners-up into champions. The motivation to do that is going to be really, really high.
I suppose the unknown with Tomljanovic to some degree is whether the competition is a bit of a problem for her, given that she did struggle in that final 3 years ago. And relatively speaking, she struggled in this one, lost to Harriet Dart, lost comfortably to Belinda Bencic. I don't think it is that. I think she's on fumes, really. You would expect, she's just had the best year of her career and she's kept on coming. She's kept, you know, she was a big factor at Wimbledon. She beat Serena Williams to end her career. She's had really good results all year long. And here we are in mid-November. I think that's a factor. I mean, I also do think there are certain player styles like Bencic who can cause her problems and kind of turn her back on herself with her skill set. But yeah, I don't think that should be overlooked, that she's one of the players who's played a lot of matches and may well be struggling physically more than some others. But anyway, she didn't make any excuses. She was just disappointed. You could tell from her, I said no regrets. She is the one who has regrets because I think she felt she could do more. But even at her very best, I don't know whether she'd have lived with Bencic the way she was playing this week.
No, I agree with you. And just a final word on the Swiss team. I asked it in the press conference, but I did think it was amazing that Jill Teichman and Ben Chich copied the Federer-Wawrinka iconic sort of on fire celebration from the 2008 Olympics. And I just loved that it came to them in that moment. And I think that will be a sort of defining image, I think, from this event, and one that, you know, certainly will be very, very popular in Switzerland, I'm sure.
Yeah, and I can just imagine Roger Federer and Stan Wawrinka watching that and thinking,
I hope so.
I bet they do. I bet they do. Because, they, you know, Federer's often talked to, with warmth about Bencic, hasn't he? He's played mixed doubles with her and at the Hopman Cup. And, yeah, I can imagine that he'll be really warm and fuzzy inside after this weekend, because I think he does care about his compatriots and the success they have. And they've just had a massive, massive piece of success right there. And just great scenes seeing Billie Jean King slip on these blue jackets onto the Swiss team. And yeah, do have a look at the photos of that if you get a chance, because it's really something. The week in general, Matt, the event in general in Glasgow, how do you depart thinking about it? You've now done a couple of these events. Obviously, it's still pretty much in its infancy in this particular guise, isn't it? Because for many, many years, it was home and away ties and World Group One and World Group Two and very, you know, it's all that. But it was when we covered the 2019 competition, everybody was in Australia, and it was an incredible atmosphere of Australia playing at home. They lost, but it was an amazing occasion. But it was just two teams for the final weekend, whereas this is, as Billie Jean was saying on the show last night, her view is this is the World Cup of tennis, and therefore the teams need to, they come in and they play in one location like this and duke it out at the finals. What's your verdict?
Well, I've done sort of four of these now, I suppose, if you count the two Davis Cup finals I've done since the format change, and now the two Billie Jean King Cup finals since the format change. And I honestly have come away from all of them feeling quite similar, in that there was plenty of good, but a lot that can be better, or that I hoped would be better. One thing that made me a little bit sad, I think, is that I was less worried or caught up this week about the size of the crowd. And I think that's because I've become used to it not being particularly good at these finals. It didn't shock me in a way that at the past editions it did. And I was like, you know, where are the crowd? Why are more people not here? And I think that we shouldn't become used to there being no crowd, because really the size of the crowd, I think, does pretty much tell you the success of the event. You know, you want people there. They help to create the event. They help to drive interest. They help to make it better. And so therefore, that was a bit disappointing, I suppose. There were, you know, there were occasions this week where the crowds were pretty good, but a lot of the time they weren't, to be quite honest. I think there were some key issues that this new format has, which it might never be able to overcome, just in terms of the crowd, in that I honestly don't know if, and apologies to these two nations, I'm just plucking them out of the air, if Slovakia, Belgium in Glasgow on a Tuesday morning, I don't think that is ever going to have a big crowd. I don't think you're ever going to be able to find a way to overcome that problem. And the other big one is the calendar, of course, the tennis calendar. And we've talked about it all week, but this event needs its own space. You know, if it's tagged onto the end of the WTA finals or the start of the WTA finals, you're constantly going to be having the same discussions every year about players having to pick one or the other, or players arriving fatigued and not being able to give their best. I do think we had a lot of good players here, probably more than last year. You know, Bencic, Rybakina, Barossa, Goff, Andreescu. It was great to see all of them here. But, you know, we also had some big names missing. The biggest name was missing in Iga Świątek, and that is a problem. So I end up feeling very conflicted, I suppose, about the whole thing. I've had a good time. There is something great about seeing all the teams together. And I do think that the idea of it works. It's just it needs to find a way to execute it better. And that's why I'm intrigued about the Davis Cup finals, where I'm going to be in a week or so, where there's only 8 teams rather than 12. It's straight knockout from the start. So, you know, you sort of know where you stand with that competition a little bit sooner. And who knows, that might work better. We'll see what the crowds are like. But generally, I think there's definitely potential, but it still feels only like potential. It doesn't feel like it's hit on a winning formula yet.
Plus, Davis Cup Finals has quite recently had its group stages in 4 yes. separate locations. So it's given you 4 home crowds where it's felt that's felt really vibrant and exciting again. It's felt like Davis and Fed Cup in days gone by. But I'm torn because there's a reason why I wanted it to change, because I didn't think it was working. I could never, trying to explain group, you know, World Group 1 and World Group 2 to people was so difficult, and to get the eyes of the world onto an event which just features 2 nations at the end of the year. Also, you know, most of the world's, what have they got invested in it? And so I really support the idea. I think the problem is, it can tennis sustain this? Can it handle what it needs to? Can it, you know, when we talk about it, comparing it to the World Cup of football, that's got obviously a much bigger pool of interest anyway, because it's one of the biggest sports in the world. But it's also got that as its format through generations. So people are used to that and they're planning ahead, and it's every 4 years and they've got time to plan. I mean, at the moment, a little bit like with Fort Worth for the WTA finals, we don't know where the event will be next year yet. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what the solution is other than to just keep on working at it and try to build it and grow it, because you've got this issue of trying to make a commercial success of the event so that it's sustainable and that it can keep laying on all this. But you've got the question mark over, well, if it goes back to Glasgow again, for instance, or it goes back to Britain again next year, is that fair? Is it fair that Britain keep hosting it? And if they keep getting wild cards into it when they've lost in April, these are all issues, I suppose, at the moment. But I also, I totally understand why that's the case. Billie Jean was saying to us yesterday that it did incredibly well to even have the event last year. I think that this is a step up, but it still feels like it could be so much better. And I'm sure everybody involved in the organization knows that, and it's just working incredibly hard to make it better. And we just got to keep hoping that it does, because I think I want it to be a success. I want it to be the World Cup of tennis. So, you know, and when you actually look down the vast list of other countries that have been playing only this weekend in the qualifiers, in the playoffs, to get into the draw for April, we've had France playing and beating the Netherlands. That's Caroline Garcia, who's just won the WTA finals, playing and winning her singles the week after in a qualifying match to get into the tie in April, which is going to be against Great Britain. It's extraordinary. We've had Germany winning in Croatia. We've had Ukraine beating Japan. What an amazing story that is. Brazil beat Argentina. Slovenia upset China. And that's Kai Yuvan beating Zheng Qinwen. These are great stories. It's truly global. As Billie Jean was saying yesterday, that the sheer number of countries taking part in this, and we've got the qualifying draw 14th to the 15th of April next year. It's going to be featuring Spain against Mexico, Ukraine against Czech Republic, GB against France, Canada against Belgium, The United States up against Austria, Slovakia versus Italy, Germany against Brazil, Kazakhstan against Poland, and Slovenia against Romania. Switzerland and Australia are straight through to next year's finals, having reached this final, which I think I like that. I think that they very much deserve that. I think that's a good way of rewarding the winning and the runners up team. But yes, I just think they've just got to keep going, I suppose, is the answer. And we've got to kind of go along with the ride and not expect it to be perfect at the moment, because how can it be?
Yeah, I agree. And I think we heard the news the other week, didn't we, that the ATP and Davis Cup are collaborating a little bit more. I mean,
yes,
what that actually means in practice, we'll see, I suppose. But I guess we want a similar thing for the WTA and the Billie Jean King Cup finals as well. You know, so the WTA is encouraging players to play the event, you know, so that they're working together, so that the WTA is promoting this event on its channels and just spreading the word out there that this event is big and important and matters and features the same players that you see on the WTA tour week in, week out. I mean, it seems like madness that that doesn't happen already, but that is the reality of the situation right now. So I'm hopeful that maybe the WTA and Billie Jean King Cup will come to a similar arrangement, and that will help just bit by bit, as you said. And I think the point you made about not knowing the venue is crucial as well, because even those qualifiers that we've just read out for April, you know, it's possible that, let's say, for example, Britain might be announced as the venue for next year's finals, and then that qualifying tie with France wouldn't even need to take place. And it's just a completely unideal situation for the tournament to be in, to have so much uncertainty around even where it is. As you said, we compare it to the Football World Cup and the Olympics. You know years in advance when those events are going to be, and there can be proper planning and all of that. And that helps people to attend, I'm sure. So all of these things are connected. But at the same time, as you said, the event in this new format is still in its infancy, and it's had to negotiate the pandemic straight after it had changed format. So it's been a very tough start for it. But, you know, I can't help but feel that as much potential and as much promise as there is for it, a lot of the competition's sort of essence and soul has been lost by taking away the home and away ties. You know, I still think in an ideal world, we would have more of them throughout the year, and then a World Cup at the end with fewer teams, maybe even every couple of years. I don't know. These are probably not perfect solutions either, and everyone's got an opinion on what will work. But as you said, let's hope that small improvements year on year, and in a few years' time, it's bigger and better than it currently is.
Yeah, well, my positive to end on is that I actually do think the Davis Cup looks better this year than it mm-hmm. did last time, as a result of these group ties played back in September and a final eight knockout. I do like that. I do feel encouraged by the fact that the ATP Cup is no longer in the way,
yeah,
and that that's become the United Cup, which is a much more attractive proposition for all the reasons that we always talk about. And it's a point of difference, and it doesn't completely sabotage or get in the way of Davis Cup. The fact that now the ATP can get behind the Davis Cup, and it's, you know, these are good little wins for the sport, for the good of the sport. They're not about just being the big dog in the federation world. Come on, do it for the sport, goodness sake. And so I'm going to take some encouragement from that, and on the understanding that, yeah, it's not going to be an overnight success, all of this. But, well, we know the people behind this event and how determined they are. And I just hope it can go from strength to strength.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, tennis podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right.
Thanks.
The ATP Finals, the NITO ATP Finals have got underway today, Matt. Catherine is in Turin and has been presenting Prime Video's coverage all day, expert as usual. It's been great watching her on telly, and some interesting results have come from it. I've watched quite a bit of the tennis today. It started with the doubles and an absolutely extraordinary match the evening match, wasn't it? Ram and Salisbury, they won 10-8 in the third set, despite being looking odds on for a straight set to win, and then got apparently very, very anxious and lost the second set on a tiebreak. As Catherine put it, squeaky bum time it was in the arena at that point for them. Anyway, they managed to get through. In the singles, we had Casper Ruud beating Felix Auger-Aliassime, Matt, this afternoon. 7-6, 6-4. That's the third successive straight sets win for Casper Ruud over the Canadian. That, to me, if I didn't know that stat, I would be very surprised by it.
Yes. I mean, I am surprised by it, even though I do know it. The one that obviously stood out was when Ruud beat him in Canada, wasn't it? I mean, he absolutely thumped him then. And I wondered whether that was just Auger-Aliassime, I don't know, freezing a little bit on the stage. And I think for the score to be so one-sided, maybe that was what happened. You saw more of this match than I did today, I think. How much did it seem like Auger-Aliassime was running on fumes or not at all? Because that's always my worry when a player has made such a big push to get to the year-end finals. You then sort of wonder how much they've got left. But personally, I felt like that wasn't the story, and I felt like Auger-Aliassime on an indoor hard court, albeit one that's pretty lively and jumping up and maybe suits Ruud a bit more than some of the others we've seen, Auger-Aliassime, I think, should be beating Ruud indoors. And given how well he's been playing recently, I think that's a little bit of a disappointing loss today, albeit on his, you know, debut in the competition and everything.
Yeah, I can't say that physicality came into my mind watching that at all. He's a fit young lad. I've never really seen Auger-Aliassime look like he's out of gas or struggling physically. He's just such a young, fresh. He's so up for it all the time. The comments of Tim Hemman in the Prime Video coverage really struck me about him. He said, "I've hardly ever seen him have a 7 out of 10 day. He's either 9 out of 10." And just destroying the opposition and playing lights out tennis, or he's terrible, effectively, is what he said. And that's true, that is. You know, if I think of back to watching Novak Djokovic at the same age, the number of matches he'd win efficiently in straight sets playing 7 out of 10 tennis, because that was enough. And that's what he got there. He got that level that he could always come back to, pretty much. You might beat him if he's not able to raise it on that level, but not many people beat him. Certainly not many people who you wouldn't expect to beat him. And yeah, Oceania seems like he's had a really good run lately, but he was poor, I thought, Matt, really. He was erratic. The backhand was Henman reckons the backhand needs real work. And it does look quite fragile to me.
Mm. Well, I was going to ask, was he rubbish today then? You know, if that's the analysis, you know, he clearly wasn't great.
He was disappointing. Right. He was disappointing. I mean, because I don't think Ruud was great. I think Ruud was fine. Ruud was 7 out of 10, right, I would say. And you know, Ogier Aliassime was 5 out of 10.
Right. And I find that a shame to hear, because I did actually think that what Ogier Aliassime had done in that run of 3 titles in a row recently was slightly lifted his average game. Like I didn't always think in those events he was playing the best tennis you could possibly play. I think his serve was on throughout, but generally I just felt like he was steadier from the back of the court and had lifted that bottom level up and had pushed, had started playing maybe some 6 or 7 out of 10s in the early rounds of those events. But yeah, I mean, I guess I do agree with the analysis generally. We don't worry about Ogier Aliassime's top level. We know that when he's on, he can be amazing. We've seen it. We've seen him push, you know, even in slams. He had a match point against Medvedev at the Australian Open this year. He pushed Nadal to 5 sets at Roland Garros. He was brilliant. But it's the round one shockers or the round two shockers or the just no-shows against Jack Draper, you know. Those are the ones that we worry about, I suppose. But I don't know. I still think he's done a lot of good work in the last month or so. And
he has.
And maybe there's a little bit of mental fatigue, if not physical.
I think as well, we have to factor in the occasion, the stage. He's suddenly part of the final eight. He'll have been seeing this on TV for years. These are the best of the best. And he's one of them. He's done the iconic photo. And I just wonder whether maybe that's got to him a bit.
Yeah, perhaps. And one of the things Catherine said from interviewing him the other day was that he did seem really pleased to be there. And I saw a clip of him, you know, talking about how nice it was to have his own locker, which they always do at this event. And that's great. I love all of that. But maybe it takes a year of experiencing that and just being sort of happy to be there. And then, you know, if he's there again next year, which I do expect him to be, he's a bit more ready for it, I guess.
The same happened if you think back to people like Berrettini and Rublev last year and maybe Ruud a bit. You know, it does happen, I think. I've seen it with quite a number of players. And then they'll often come back and the next year and look different. Medvedev, remember the first year he played and he just had the run to the US Open final and he was terrible at the O2, but then he won it the next year. So, you know, we'll see. Ruud did what he does and he did it well. And then the night session match had Rafael Nadal up against Taylor Fritz, and Fritz beat him 7-6, 6-1. It featured one of the shots of the year from Nadal. He played a little sort of pushed, poked forehand chip because he had to improvise to get to the net because the ball had clipped the top of the net, I think. And then he was lobbed by Fritz. And so Nadal had to just contort his body and get himself into position to hit a high backhand overhead smash. And he hit it so hard and so acutely angled that it was a clean winner. And it was like a slam dunk backhand smash. Amazing. But he lost the set. He lost the set on a tie break. I thought he looked pretty good. He looked fresh. He looked really up for it. And there was some good shot making in there as well. But Fritz just really hits his ball so well because his own backhand is so strong. Nadal can't really hurt him with the spinning, looping, bounding ball up to the backhand. I think Fritz is quite happy to hit that back, a bit like Zverev's quite happy to hit that ball back. And he's just got firepower, Fritz. And it was very interesting to hear Fritz talk about the court speed in the on-court interview afterwards. So often you don't get a very satisfactory answer from a tennis player about court speed. But Fritz really broke it down and said, to be honest, this is really quite quick, this court. And that helps my serve and my backhand. But it doesn't help all parts of my game, because if it's slower, I get more time to wind up on the forehand. So I really got an insight into how it works for him. Second set, you just demolished Nadal, really. And Nadal went away a bit like he did in Paris the other week.
Yeah, I didn't see this match because of everything that was happening here in Glasgow. But just looking at the scoreline and hearing what you've said and just following some of the reaction to the match generally, that was the pattern of the match in Paris, wasn't it? I was really quite encouraged. I think we were texting, weren't we, when he played Tommy Paul. Oh, Nadal's looking pretty good here. And then almost as soon as we sent that, he faded physically and Paul ran through the third set of that match, wasn't it? And in the same way that Fritz ran through this one, I suppose. I think I read it's the first time in 13 years that Nadal's lost three matches in a row. Because if you go back to the US Open and then Paris and then this one, we're just not used to seeing Nadal in this situation. But again, something else Catherine said was that she feels like Nadal is using this event for data gathering, I think she said on the podcast the other day. And that was quite interesting to me, that I thought that maybe Nadal would shut down his season after the US Open or after the Laver Cup anyway, where he made an appearance for Federer. But actually, perhaps he just feels like getting some matches in is going to be more helpful for him going into next year. I think it's encouraging that his ab and rib seems to be better. His service motion is much more normal again, whereas it was all a bit funny in Cincinnati and the US Open, I felt. But yeah, I think that means it's Nadal, Auger-Aliassime next, because the two winners play and the two losers play, which brings up Tony Nadal as he was in Felix Auger-Aliassime's box today. And then, of course, when they met at the French Open, he sat in the most awkward position imaginable in the front row. And he sort of basically said that he wanted Nadal to win, even though he's coaching Auger-Aliassime. It was a whole thing. So, you know, there's Catherine's, you know, plot to sort of build that match up on when will that be? Tuesday, I suppose. That's a big talking point. What's gonna happen about Uncle Tony?
Oh, that's brilliant. We also had a doubles match at the start of the day. Lloyd Glasspool, British player, sixth seed, alongside his partner, whose first name I can't remember. Heliavara is the second name. Can you remember his first name?
I think it might be Harry. Harry Heliavara.
Okay. Well, he's a charming chap. I heard him interviewed afterwards, and he seems really nice. And they won 7-5, 7-6 against Roger and Arevalo Gonzalez, the third seeds. So well done to those two. Tomorrow in the ATP finals, we've got a first match of Neil Skupski and Wesley Kuhlhoff, the top seeds, up against Tanasi Kakanakis and Nick Kyrgios. So I am going to be tuning in for that. It's going to be 11:30 local time in Italy. Then it's Daniil Medvedev against Andrei Rublev. Evening session is Mektic Pavic against Dodik Krajicek. And then Stefanos Tsitsipas against Novak Djokovic. So loads to come. We're going to be coming back in at the end of the week after the group stages to review those. And I, Matt, have nailed 2 weeks in a row of predictions. So
paint those nails.
Like Heinz Gunther.
You have. You are on the comeback trail. I'm going to be honest, I'm getting a little bit worried.
Oh, I don't think you've got... I'm about 400 points
behind.
Are
you?
Matt,
you need to go big. You need to pick Rublev and hope he wins the ATP finals. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I can't do that. I'm not doing that. Anyway, I'll decide. I'll decide in the newsletter, which will be going out in a couple of days' time. So sign up to the newsletter if you haven't already. The link to do so is in the show notes, as is the link to become a friend of the Tennis Podcast. That's our subscription scheme that gives you access to more than 20 bonus podcasts that we've recorded so far this year. That includes tennis relived, nostalgic looks at great stories from the past, and focusing on players like Juan Martín Del Potro and Lee Na and Amélie Mauresmo. And there's loads of other stories. We talked at Wimbledon about the juniors, the junior champions, and whatever happened to them. What else do we talk about? Middle Sundays, remembering those. We've had so many interesting stories to talk about for Friends of the Tennis Podcast. And yeah, you can also get a shout out. You can get an intro for a show, and you just get to support us generally and keep this show on the road. So, Matt, anything else of interest that you've watched and enjoyed in your time in Glasgow? Are you happy to be leaving? Are you sad to be leaving?
Well, I think you're always a little bit sad at the end of an event. You know, you pour so much of yourself into these events that suddenly when they're over, it's like, oh, well, what now? but I'll head home tomorrow, and then I'll be off to Malaga at the weekend to do it all over again for the Davis Cup finals. But yeah, generally, David, it's been very nice talking to you every night. Tonight, I think in particular, because other than all the great tennis that we've had today, it's been a rough sports day for me, I'm not going to lie. We had Fulham losing in the very last second to Man United, despite dominating them. I was watching that on my screen while tapping away, writing about Belinda Bencic. And then the Buffalo Bills lost in overtime this afternoon as well. So it's been really rough for my teams. And I feel like this has been a nice cathartic experience talking about more positive sport.
Yes. And Matt's sitting there right now in his Buffalo Bills top. I'm sitting here in my double Seattle Seahawks top, one blue one, one lime green, and they've lost today as well. So we're, oh dear, it's not gone very well today. But things are going to be looking up. We're not going to be staying down for long. Don't you worry, folks. I've got my own mascot, Darwin, and we've had 2 weeks in a row of big wins, Darwin. Catherine's got Carter. Matt's got the dearly departed Gerald, the cat. Billie Jean, the dog, is sponsored by Billie Jean King and Alana Kloss. Chris Albert Lee and Carl Weingartner are our executive producers and top blokes. And we do have shout-outs tonight, Matt.
We do. Not only do we have shout-outs, we have Catherine contributions as well, which I know everyone always loves. starting with Eleanor Lucero in Lowell, Massachusetts.
Wow. Hi, Eleanor. Thanks very much.
Eleanor says something very lovely, which is that she didn't think she could love tennis more, but in discovering the podcast, it's now a certifiable obsession.
Oh, I quite like being somebody's certifiable obsession, even if I am only one third of it. Thank you so much.
We've also got Sarah Pheasant in Washington, D.C.
Right, Sarah.
Catherine says that Washington's very high on her to-visit list. And also that pheasant can make a lovely Sunday roast if cooked right. An overdone pheasant is a very bad thing.
I see.
I've never had pheasant.
No, me neither. Sarah, what tennis players have we had called Sarah? Do you remember the British player Sarah Gomer?
No.
Blank expression there, Matt. Sarah Gomer was a British player in the 80s. So, you know, there we are. Can't think of any others.
Normally you have an anecdote about a tennis player, but not from the 90s, I suppose. This we can let you off.
I seem to remember Sarah Gomer was the trivia answer for the last British player to win or do something before Heather Watson did it or something like that. But anyway, Sarah, thank you so much for being a friend of the Tennis Podcast.
We've also got Matthew Kekkelis in Nashville, Tennessee.
Oh, good. Matthews. We like Matthews. All right, Matthew.
Yep, that's exactly what Catherine said. Great name, great hometown. See all previous things I've said about Taylor Swift. P.S. I called Taylor Fritz Taylor Swift on air earlier.
By the way, I think Tennessee beat the Denver Broncos today, so I'm quite happy about that.
You're always happy when the Broncos lose.
Yeah. Russell Wilson, you are no longer one of us. Carry on.
We've also got Tree Giver, and I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, but Tree Giver is in Oslo, Norway, and says, I like to think Matt would enjoy my backhand.
Whoa.
Which are big words, let me tell you.
I would have to have Marit Safin's backhand to have the confidence to say that to Matt. But Tree Giver, I like the fact that you're a big believer in your backhand. Does he say whether it's a single or a double?
No information there. That's okay. Fine. I can enjoy both.
Okay.
As long as it's good.
What's the ratio currently on the backhand list of single hands to backhand to double-handed?
It's 4-1 in the favour of double-handers. But I actually think if I had a men's backhand list, I think I would put more single-handers in there. That's my feeling, having not finalised it yet.
Do we ever think we're going to get a published men's backhand list?
Yeah, probably.
Stay tuned.
Stay tuned, exactly.
I haven't heard it. So, you know, we're in the same boat here.
And Catherine points out that it's a great day for Norway with Casper Ruud winning today.
Yes, it is. So well done. Well done, Trigger. Well done, Casper Ruud.
And the final one today is Nolan Crawford in New York City.
Right, Nolan.
Nolan says that the closest he's come to meeting a host of the Tennis Podcast was when he saw me seated below him at this year's US Open during Kvitova Muguruza. And apparently I was looking exceptionally calm despite the on-court tension.
Oh, yeah, that was tense, wasn't it? Mm. That was an amazing match. That was when Muguruza thought she got it won, and then it went into a tie break, didn't it?
Yeah, that was the match which really helped, I think, reboot the tournament after Serena Williams had gone out. Everyone was feeling a little bit flat, and then that match happened, and it was like, okay, the US Open is still going to be fine.
Good call, Nolan. Well, I hope you see us around sometime at a tennis tournament. We're going to be going to many more of them in the future. And thanks to people like you, because you're shouting us out and a friend of the Tennis Podcast and, you know, helping us to make all this work. So thank you so much. Matt, it's been a pleasure over the last week. You've done a sterling job, as always. Many more of them to come, I'm sure. As Matt said, he's going to be going to Malaga for the Davis Cup Finals for us, where we'll be producing daily editions of the show. Before that, we're going to be summing up the group stages of the ATP Finals. I reckon that's around about Friday night, our time, something like that. Not exactly sure, but then we'll also cover the semi-finals on Saturday and the final on Sunday. This is next week. And then we'll be right into the Davis Cup Finals as well. So loads more tennis podcasts coming your way. If you want some more in the next 4 or 5 days, become a friend. You've got the bonus shows there. And thanks for your company. We'll speak to you soon.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.